Welcome back to the Crash Course Podcast. My name is Craig Crash Collins, joined as always by Brandon Scott, otherwise known as B Scott. We've got a lot of football to talk about with some IndyCar at the end. We're going to talk about the Colts loss to the Rams week two of the season as the Colts dropped to 0-2. We're also going to talk about the most exciting team in Indiana college football. I mean, we pick one. It doesn't mean there's necessarily
this was a rough weekend for sports in the state of Indiana. Central Indiana.
Yeah, it really was. And then you also have the championship weekend for IndyCar as they wind down their 2021 season. So, a lot to talk about tonight. But first, B. Scott, how was your weekend, man?
It was good. Highlighted by going to see the Paw Patrol movie last night.
Yeah, I saw the pictures on Instagram. It was absolutely adorable. Jillian getting a chance to go to the movie. You said that was the first time she's been to the movies, right?
First time at the movies. And, you know, I guess it was so adorable that the writer and director of the Paw Patrol movie liked the tweet.
B. Scott just making connections everywhere.
What I do. Network.
Hey, Paw Patrol, come on the show. Let's get the creator of Paw Patrol on the show.
Paw Patrol, we're on a roll. interview Chase.
Yeah, I think it's only fair. We need to get we got to get his thoughts on Air Bud, man. We got to figure out.
I think I'm more aligned with Rocky. I mean, his dog is a recycling pup, and you know he builds things out of whatever he's got in the back of his recycling truck. I think I could hit it off with Rocky, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the whole gang, really.
Rubble would hit up the all-you-can-eat buffet with you.
Yeah, I think that's the next fantasy draft of, which Paw Patrol character would you want to start your NFL franchise with? I think that's the perfect conversation. But let's go ahead.
Definitely not Marshall. Marshall's got the butterfingers and the dropsies and falls over easily.
I gotcha. So he's who was it for the Colts? Like Darius Hayward Bay or, you know, somebody who always had the draw, Hank Basket, maybe. He's the guy who muffed the onside kick.
Yeah.
But
Hayward Bay as well.
But let's go ahead. Speaking of former Colts and now current Colts, let's get into the podcast here. Week two of the NFL season, Colts host the Rams. Can the Colts come back and right the ship after losing week one? And so here's a summary of the game. Scoring starts off, the only touchdown of the first half really was a pass from Matt Stafford to Cooper Kupp, 16 yards for a touchdown to get things kicked off. The Rams led 10-6 at the half. The teams traded touchdowns in the third quarter. First, it was a 2-yard touchdown run by Daryl Henderson for LA. Then Carson Wentz threw a 8-yard touchdown pass to Zach Pascal. He's been finding Pascal quite a bit. That seems to be the combination. In the fourth quarter, it was a very interesting fourth quarter, to say the least. The Colts recovered a botched punt in the end zone for a touchdown. Matthew Stafford to Cooper Kupp. Gives the Rams the lead again. So after the Rams lose the lead, they get it right back. With 7:22 left to go in the fourth quarter, Rodrigo Blankenship hits a 35-yard field goal. It ties the game. But on that drive, Carson Wentz rolls his ankle. He's unable to return. Matt Gay hits a 38-yard field goal with 2:23 left to give the Rams 27-24 advantage. And then Jacob Eason, first drive, coming in, can he get it done? First pass is an incompletion. Second pass is an interception to Jalen Ramsey, one of the best DBs in the game. He gets the pick, and the game is over. Looking at the Colts statistics, Carson Wentz was 20 for 31 with 247 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. Michael Pittman had 8 catches for 123 yards. Matthew Stafford, 19 of 30 with 278 yards and 2 touchdowns, both to Cooper Kupp. Kupp had 9 catches for 163 yards and those 2 aforementioned touchdowns. So Colts start 0-2, not anything really, B. Scott, we didn't see coming. We both thought that the Colts would struggle these first couple of weeks, and they absolutely have. And honestly, for me, it comes down, obviously we're no, you know, NFL coaches, but just, you know, from our chairs, I just think that, you know, the coaches need to reevaluate their strategy or their play calling. Something is just not right so far. The Colts are now, we talked about it a little bit last week. The Colts are now 0-4 this season on fourth down. Mentioned last week that they last year converted 60% of their fourth down plays. And that's something that Coach Reich has kind of been kind of made part of his offense is, hey, you know what? We've crunched the numbers and analytically it makes sense to go on these fourth downs in these situations. But so far, the Colts are 0-4. Wentz is sacked on fourth and goal on the opening possession. Obviously, we don't know if the game plays out exactly the same as it does, but obviously when you're right there in field goal range and you lose by a field goal, that definitely is something that you know, come back and kind of say, hey, you know what? Those are points that we would like to have in a 3-point game. And then the Colts were 1-4 in the red zone on Sunday. Wentz throws an interception on third and goal, which that drive had followed when the Colts get an interception. So, I mean, last 2 weeks, we've basically boiled down kind of what the momentum swings were and what led ultimately to the Colts losing. And I think you can kind of attribute that to those two things that I mentioned. I mean, you look at the fourth down and goal, they go for it, don't get it. And those are 3 points that in a 3-point game you'd love to have. And then you have Wentz throwing an interception right after, you know, you got momentum. You've just got an interception yourself. You have an opportunity to at minimum get 3 points, still don't come away with anything. It's a little shovel pass that gets intercepted by the Rams. Now, one thing I will say is good on the coaching side of things is the fact that I think it was the right call leaving Wentz on the bench, not forcing him to go back out there, because at the end of the day, it is still week two of a 17 game season. So you don't necessarily need to rush him back out there, especially with his, you know, injury prone history. And we'll, you know, and now we find out that he's got sprained ankles on two sprained ankles.
I don't buy it.
You don't?
I don't buy it. I don't believe it's just a sprain. You go back, watch that replay of, I believe it was his right ankle. The way it got caught underneath him and popped back around, or popped. So it popped. You can see a pop. There's something more than two sprained ankles. I'm sorry. There is something more there. And we're just not being told. Because
yeah.
That video, when I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, how in the world is he even walking? That ankle, it looked like it broke, or at least dislocated, or maybe not dislocated, because he wouldn't be walking with dislocated. But it did not look good when you watch the replay, and especially when you see it in slow-mo. It definitely pops. So I don't buy that it's two sprained ankles.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, hopefully sprain would be better than broken. So hopefully
not necessarily.
You don't think so? Well, oh yeah. Cause isn't it with like, sprains,
a high sprain that lingers.
I was going to say, don't they usually
a long time?
Don't they usually say that like when you sprain your ankle, it's better to have broken it than to sprain it. Isn't that what they say? Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's really nothing you can do other than just like, I mean, they have treatment that they can go through, but I mean, it's just a sprain just lingers. Whereas a break, it's fixed, takes some time to heal. You're good. And it's much better to break than it is to sprain.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then of course, you know, like I said, I think it's the right call ultimately to leave him on the bench. The timing of the injuries just stinks because obviously it's right before you have
makes sense because yeah. The fewer snaps that he plays, the less likely we are to have to give our first round pick to Philadelphia. And at this rate, it looks like it's going to be a pretty darn good first round pick as well.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, it's just rough. I think that, you know, it's just tough. Carson Wentz, you know, did play well ultimately.
Oh yeah.
And he has been, but I mean, I would just think that late in a game, you would not be thinking, okay, well, let's leave him on the bench in a game that you feel like you'd rather start 1-1 than 0-2. But I mean, yeah, definitely. It looks like,
well, like he said, there really was no choice for him.
Right.
He could not put any pressure on it. And I'm right. It adds the foot he throws off of. So you need him to do a game-winning drive. You can't keep pressure out of his face, and you're expecting him to throw off of an ankle that is not in good shape. Come on. He wasn't coming back in. Unless he was 100% healthy, he'd be back in. But there's no way he could have gone back in that game.
Right.
You know, for me, okay, so essentially the sky's not falling. Let's just put it that way. 0-2, a lot of people predicted 0-2. It's 0-2 against two NFC West teams. But what we need to put to bed right now, we need to put to bed this team being a Super Bowl contender. That's not happening. That's just not happening. 2 weeks in a row playing against Super Bowl caliber teams. And yeah, we played better against the Rams, but still not good enough. I'm on the same boat as a lot of other people. I do believe Darius Leonard is injured because he's in on some plays and then he disappears for several others. I don't know. Where's Xavier? What's going on with Xavier Rhodes? I mean, dude's been MIA just after getting torched in camp. So is he just like, man, I can't do this anymore, and calling it done? There's a lot of question marks there. Obviously the secondary was always going to be a big question mark. The thing that I'm still scratching my head about the most, though, this offensive line. How is an offensive line that is supposed to be so good now this bad? This is like watching early Andrew Luck years. You know, I will say the left side of the line played a lot better with Eric Fisher in there, even though he was limited. They pretty much had him on a snap count. And Quentin Nelson did really well against Aaron Donald. The only time Aaron Donald really got anything is when they bumped him over to the right side, obviously going up against Mark Lewinsky and Julian Davenport at right tackle and for Braden Smith. So, I mean, if the Colts are serious about wanting to be contenders, they really need to start looking at the veteran free agent market right now. There's several players out there that could be really good contributors for this team, because this team needs help in a lot of areas. And I haven't even gotten to wide receiver. Offensive line, I mean, Mitchell Schwartz is still out there, guys. If you need somebody, he's more serviceable than Julian Davenport, for goodness sakes. I mean, come on. Anything's better than what he's putting out there. There's several good offensive linemen. We need help in the secondary. I mean, kick the tires on Richard Sherman now that the NFL is investigating his arrest back in July, which may turn out to be a mental health issue that he was going through at the time. And, you know, that might be a game suspension just for being arrested. There's several players out there at that. Wide receiver, you're a little bit more limited at. I mean, Golden Tate, how many times has he said that he'd want to come play for the Colts? I mean, bring him in. Anything's got to be better, because right now it's Michael Pittman and Zach Pascal. We need to figure out that, hey, guess what? Paris Campbell's never going to be an option. He's played 10 games in his 3-year career. I think it's about time for the Colts to kind of step away from that Ohio State pipeline, because the last two big names they got from Ohio State couldn't stay on the field. That's got to change. It has to change. And I mean, right now, the highest drafted wide receiver on this Colts offense right now is the second round pick, Michael Pittman. I mean, that's really good. That's high. Everybody else is either undrafted or a very late round draft pick. It's tough to build around that. I know Chris Ballard preaches, you know, we want to build this from home. We want to grow it. Grow our own, you know, we this, that, and it's the other. It's like, come on. Eventually you have to stop that, because it's at certain positions, because it's not working. It's just not working. Your wide receivers can't get any separation. Your offensive line, I don't know what's going on there now. I mean, we do know that Quentin Nelson's Quentin Nelson, but I don't know. Are they, is it the health? I mean, I don't, I cannot figure out what's going on with this team. I mean, yes, we played two very good teams, but the expectations for this Colts team coming into this season were that they were going to be playoff contenders, not just playoff contenders, contenders for the division title, potentially making a push towards a Super Bowl. And I'll tell you what, right now, I highly doubt this team could, if they, unless they win the division, this is not a playoff caliber team. This is just not. I mean, the blocking even for the running game is just isn't there. I mean, poor Jonathan Taylor. I mean, he's getting hit and carrying tacklers, thankfully, but that can't last forever. And then the play calling is another thing. I'm just so confused about the play calling. Like, for three straight plays, it's you're on the 1 yard line. You can't punch it in. So what do you do on fourth down? You drop back and try to pass it with not even pretending that you're going to try to run the ball. You move Jonathan Taylor out of the backfield into the slot. It's like, then you wonder why there's nobody there for any extra pass protection. So you wonder why Carson Wentz took a 10-yard sack. I mean, it's just like, come on. Somebody needs to tell Frank Reich that, hey, guess what, coach? If we don't convert it on fourth down, they get the ball back. For some reason, I don't believe that he understands that. And it's really starting to show. I understand wanting to be aggressive and trying to keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. But, I mean, you didn't get it in on three straight plays, basically running the same thing from the 1 yard line. Take the points. Guess what? Those 3 points that you would have been guaranteed 3 points right there. That would have gone a long way there at the end. So I don't know. It's so confusing, the play calling. And then, you know, last week, Nyheim Hines had a good game, you know, and we rewarded him with that contract extension and everything. He saw, like, I think it was, I read three snaps. Yeah, they got Marlon Mack more involved, so I'll give you that a little bit, but three? I mean, he's a player. He's probably, outside of Jonathan Taylor, the most electrifying player on your offense right now. And I'm not saying that as a to bash him by what he means by whatsoever. I mean, he is. He's the most electrifying player on that offense next to Jonathan Taylor. I mean, anytime Nyheim Hines gets the ball in his hands, he is a threat to score. So you give him three snaps? Come on. If there's not good protection for the passer, Nyheim Hines is a player that you can dump it out to, and he's going to create yards on his own. He's a good security blanket to have. So you don't play him. I mean, I guess that makes sense. I don't know. But this team, the sky's not falling. I know it makes it making it sound like the sky's falling, but it's not. 0-2 against two teams from the NFC. You still have a full slate of all six games against your division. However, it looks like you're most likely going to be having to go into Tennessee without your starting quarterback, as Tennessee is playing better now. I mean, Tennessee just, I mean, well, I guess.
I was going to say, we can't even say what we did last week, which was at least Tennessee lost too. So, you know, that's good. And it looked like they were.
What's sad is that Tennessee actually lost to a team that beat, or Tennessee beat a team that beat us.
Yeah.
But apparently, you know, even with the officials, we're trying to took away so many points from Tennessee. Tennessee kept losing points taken off the scoreboard because of, like, you stepped out of bounds, and so the touchdown was overturned, or no, that was not a safety. Russell Wilson turned out he was not in the end zone, or, you know, those types of things. And they, you know, they were trying everything to help Seattle win. Tennessee still won. So that means this Tennessee team's riding the ship. Apparently, though, Taylor Lewan, their left tackle, did injure his knee in pregame. So I don't know how big of a deal that's going to be. But right now, the Colts can't produce any sort of pass rush. So I don't think it really matters.
Yeah, you know, coming off what some of the things you said, I remember a tweet I saw earlier today that was like, you know, we have to remember that it's year five for Reich and company. It's not year one. And, like, you gotta, Like, and it kind of some of the conversations that like I've seen and kind of what you're bringing up is like, you know, Chris, it kind of came up we're during the draft, like when we were like, what the heck is happening? Because, you know, Chris Ballard has a method, like Frank Reich has a method, and we've trusted that method to this point. But at the same time, like, they, even when it doesn't work, they still go with it. And I'm like, yes, there's something to be said about staying, you know, within yourself and doing, you know, sticking to your plan, no matter what it's, you know, what gets thrown at you. But the thing is that, you know, everything's fluid. Things change over time. It doesn't just like, oh, you can't just keep grinding away at whatever plan you have and then it just expect it to work out flawlessly no matter what. Like, there's things that can change. And that kind of is what you're bringing up in the whole, like, try out some other receivers, even though they want to build in house, you know, start maybe drifting away from being so aggressive because it's not working. And maybe, you know, if you take the points or if you try to be a little bit more creative in what you're doing, then maybe you can start, you know, going for it on fourth down again and things like that. So yeah, it doesn't get any easier next week. And we'll see if Jacob Eason can rebound and if he does end up being the starter, hopefully Carson Wentz can come back. But yeah, it's just something, I mean, someone I saw on Twitter was bringing up like maybe Frank Reich should give up the play calling. I'm not 100% there yet after two bad games, but
it off to, because our offensive coordinator is a first year offensive coordinator. It's not like he's handing it off to Matt Sirianni, who, you know, okay, that's fine. I think our offensive coordinator is Joe Brady.
Yeah.
I believe. He's good. I'll give it. I mean, but, you know, he doesn't have the experience of calling plays. It's just, I don't even know if it's really the play call. It's
just the strategy.
A little bit of the strategy. It's not geared towards exactly the way the team's playing. You know, it's geared towards how they believe the team should be playing.
Right.
You know, some things, and I don't know. And I feel like if there's a time for Chris Ballard to open the pocketbook, you know, and not be so tight with it, it is now. I mean, you have an owner that keeps saying Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, but yet the roster doesn't say Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. I mean, on paper, potentially, yes. Not the wide receiving core. I'm sorry. They haven't given that enough attention at all. And it's showing that they're not giving it enough attention. So I don't know what else to do other than we need to start looking at maybe, I can't say trades because we don't have anything to trade.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, it'll just be interesting to see what they can do. I feel like, you know, we've kind of hammered home all of the points. So I don't want to get too much, I don't want to talk too much in circles here, but yeah, I mean, because on the one hand you have the fact that like, this is hands down, the toughest schedule or one of the tougher schedules in the league. I mean, you know, you don't want to give them a free pass because like, oh, we're playing the NFC West and the AFC East, which, you know, combined those divisions have like seven playoff teams between out of eight, plus the one division opponent that you play twice that's also got Super Bowl aspirations. So like, it's a tough schedule. And so, I mean, it doesn't get any easier and it's a rough start, but at the same time, like you said, this is a team that's been thinking that they're Super Bowl caliber that, you know, is not playing up to that ability. So we'll see what happens. I mean, we've seen the Colts start, you know, worse and get better as the season goes on. And hopefully that'll be more of the case. You know, and then, like I said, a couple weeks ago, when we did the Colts preview, Frank Reich is undefeated as the head coach when he's played in Nashville. So we'll see if that rings true. But yeah, that'll be all for our Colts conversation for this week. We'll go ahead and move it on to our college football conversation. But before we do that, let's go ahead and thank our friends of the show.
Are you tired of your same old lunch hour of sitting and scrolling through your apps on your smartphone? Have you thought about playing a board game with your coworkers? Eat Lunch and Board Game is a podcast dedicated to telling you about board games that are great for lunchtime fun and some that are probably better saved for after work hours. I've been playing games at my office for over 4 years now where I have made new friends and business connections that have been very useful. Board games build bridges.
So let's go ahead now and move on over to talk about the collegiate football endeavors of the state of Indiana as we move away from the NFL. If you watched us in our pregame or our preseason special for Indiana College football, we did something called the Indiana Ambassador Rankings. That was a way for us to rank the exciting teams around the state. Obviously, if we just ranked flat on skill, obviously, you could pretty much guess what those rankings would look like. Notre Dame would be at the top. They would never move. It would be boring. So we're like, hey, what teams excite us around the state? What teams can we talk about that we don't typically talk about? And so here's how the rankings look like in the preseason. We had Ball State number one coming off of their amazing 6-1 MAC championship, first bowl win in school history season. We had IU at number two because they had big aspirations. We thought, hey, they're ranked 17th. They are who I thought they were. Their fan base was very excited.
They're so boring now that the fan base is tearing out bleachers and crowd surfing them down from the top of the stadium. You know who's going to be really upset about that? Not the athletic department. The geese that are going to have to come in and take over those empty seats as the season progresses.
they're really upset about that. Like, you're messing up our real estate here.
Where am I supposed to go poop if I'm a goose? Where? For those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, there was a big thing, I think it was last year or the year before, where like half the IU football stadium was empty during a football game, and like all the bleachers, actually it was the Purdue IU game, I think, and all the, or I don't know which one, but all the bleachers that were not filled were just covered in goose poop. Just absolutely covered in goose poop. Like, they had no idea they were having a football game, and they were like, oh my gosh, we should have probably cleaned these off. Like, huh?
Also, I need to contact our editor to clip out. Where am I supposed to poop? We need to use that as a soundbite whenever we need it. We had Notre Dame at number three because they were just kind of bland. They're where they usually are every year. Can they do something to impress us? Marion from the NAIA, we had at four. And then we had Purdue at five. So, now we, looking back at this past weekend, we had two of those teams play, number 12 Notre Dame against Purdue. The Fighting Irish do get the win 27-13. It was 10-3 Notre Dame at halftime. A 62-yard pass to Avery Davis for Notre Dame makes it 17-6. Jack Plummer had a touchdown pass to Milton Wright. He gets the Boilers back within four, but then a Kyron Williams 51-yard touchdown run makes it 27-13, and that is the final score. Jack Cohn was 15 of 30 for 223 yards and two touchdowns for Notre Dame. Avery Davis had five catches for 120 yards and a touchdown. Jack Plummer for the Boilers, 25 for 36, 187 yards and a touchdown. We also had IU. They fell to 1-2. Number 8 Cincinnati beats the Hoosiers, 38-24. Michael Penix had two touchdown passes to give IU the early 14-0 lead. Cincinnati fans were definitely not excited about that one. But it was 14-10 Hoosiers at the half. After losing the lead, DJ Matthews had a touchdown run to give IU the 21-17 lead in the third quarter. But then that ensuing kickoff, Trey Tucker runs it back 99 yards for a touchdown to answer. It's 24-23 IU after the third. In the fourth quarter, Desmond Ritter throws a 19-yard touchdown pass to Alec Pierce, and then Ritter runs it in 7 yards for a touchdown. They get the 2-point conversion, which makes it the 38-24 final score. Michael Penix Jr. was 17 for 40, 224 yards, two touchdowns, three interceptions. Desmond Ritter was 20 of 36 for 210 yards, a touchdown and interception. Jerome Ford, 20 carries, 66 yards and two touchdowns. Alec Pierce, five catches, 86 yards and a touchdown for the Bearcats. So let's go ahead and look at what the Indiana Ambassador rankings look like now as far as what teams excite us across the state. So we'll go 1 through 5 here. Number 1 for us is going to be, B. Scott and I are in agreement on this all the way through. Notre Dame is number one. And the reason why they're number one, it's more or less by default. They're holding number one by the hair on their chinny chin chin.
You know,
the,
it has 1A and 1B.
You know the goatee that the Irish mascot has? That's the hair that they're clinging on to that one spot in our rankings, because they're the best and likely only shot an Indiana school has at the college football playoff. So, B. Scott, you and I were talking about, before the show, that there's a possibility, at least I think so, that if they lose one game, which I think it's, in my opinion, the way they've looked the first few weeks of the season, where, they needed overtime to beat Florida State, who's now 0-3 after getting their doors blown off by Wake, after losing on a Hail Mary to Jacksonville State. Notre Dame barely squeaked past Toledo, winning 32-29. Now, granted, Toledo has gone into places like Arkansas and won. They've gone into Minnesota when Minnesota had Marion Barber and won. They, if you remember him, that's a name out of the hat.
Marion Barber.
Yes, true. Toledo has a history of being just a school that can get it done on the road in a hostile Toledo's environment.
Going to Purdue and beating Purdue.
Right. It was similar to the game that that Ball State played against them a few years ago, as far as being really close. But just Notre Dame doesn't look very good. And then they play number 18 Wisconsin at Soldier Field this Saturday. So that, that or the Cincinnati game, I see them losing one or both of those games. But losing one, in my opinion, puts them out of the college football. I mean, they won't truly be out until the rankings are put out or they lose two games. But I mean, even comparing them with other teams that are ahead of them, like let's say talk about Clemson, number 9, their one loss right now is to Georgia. So that already is a better loss should Notre Dame lose to anybody else on their schedule. Ohio State. Yeah, Ohio State's in front of them. Their loss to Oregon doesn't look as bad as, whoever Notre Dame might lose to. So, I mean, there's other teams that I think would get in over Notre Dame should they lose. And like I said, I think they're on the path to losing. I mean,
if they lose to Cincinnati, Cincinnati's ahead of them.
Right. So Cincinnati's already ahead of them.
Cincinnati's got a clearer path into the playoff than Notre Dame does. Honestly, I believe – because of how front-loaded Notre Dame's schedule is, their back end of their schedule is very winnable. And they could easily, I guess you're right, they could back into a playoff spot. But with everybody else having such stronger schedules that time of year than Notre Dame, it's going to be tough. I mean, I don't know. It would be a very strong, a big uphill battle for Notre Dame to back their way into a playoff spot with one loss. There's a lot of other teams that have one loss that would get in ahead of them.
That's what I'm saying.
But it's just basically that. So you're saying there's a chance.
That's basically what I'm saying is that their only way to get in, I guess I could have phrased that better. The only way they're going to get in is if they back their way in. Kind of like what they did last year when there was really no choice because like the 8 teams behind them also lost their championship games. So the committee was like, what do we do? let's take Notre Dame. They definitely have it tough. So we'll see. So the number one for now, we'll see what happens going forward. Now, number two on our list and B. Scott, I made them number two before you even looked at the list. So, I mean, we can't call you a homer here. Number two, and like you said, they're 1A and 1B for you. And I honestly agree. Purdue.
Because I say 1A and 1B because I'm not looking at from a playoff potential. I don't think Notre Dame is a playoff caliber team this year. So I'm basing off of how we kind of started off as the exciting factor.
Yeah.
Purdue has been much more exciting this year to watch than Notre Dame. Notre Dame has been kind of like nail biter exciting just because like, oh, are they going to pull this out? Whereas Purdue, they've just been exciting.
Yeah, I agree with you. They're coming off their loss to Notre Dame, but Purdue has looked strong. in their first 3 weeks of the season. You have Jack Plummer right now completing 72% of his passes, 7 touchdowns to no interceptions, which is really cool. Of course, we were in attendance game one against Oregon State. The house was rocking. Really fun environment there. Go check out the vlog on YouTube. 3C Media. And then they do play Illinois and Minnesota, both winnable games. The Illini are 1-3, having lost 3 straight, including a loss to UT San Antonio. Minnesota fell to Ohio State on the opening Thursday, squeaked by Miami of Ohio by 4 before blowing out Colorado 30-0. So those, in theory, I'm going to say in theory because I'm not going to say they are, because that means next week they're going to go out and lose to Illinois. But they should be, in theory, tune-up games for them to then play number 5, Iowa, and number 18, Wisconsin, in back-to-back weeks in mid-October. So that's what makes them exciting, because they could, at that point, be, what, 5-1?
No, 4-1.
4-1. Okay, so at that point, they could be 4-1. Math is hard. They could be 4-1 going into those games that, I mean, I'm not really 1,000% sold on Iowa. I'm really surprised they got all the way up to number 5. I know it's because Iowa State was highly ranked. I'm not saying Iowa's overrated. I guess technically I am, but like, I don't think they're five.
Iowa's first 2 wins of the season were big wins over ranked opponents. I mean, they blew the doors off of, at the time, IU. number 17 Indiana, and yeah, then they beat Iowa State. They did struggle a little bit early on against Kent State, and then they righted that ship and blew them out as well. I'll tell you what, when I look at the Purdue schedule, I don't see Purdue going into Iowa and beating Iowa. I think more so you get through that game and head into at home against number 18 Wisconsin and pull an upset there. That's the way I look at the, but you know, I'll tell you what, even looking at the Purdue schedule, if Purdue were to beat every unranked team on the remainder of their schedule and lose to every ranked team on the remainder of their schedule, that still finishes the season 7-5.
Yeah, which is around where we're at.
Remember how I said that win, that first game against Oregon State was a crucial, crucial game? Yes, it was. Just like these next 2 games are crucial as well. They're all crucial at this point. But when you play in the Big Ten, going into the Big Ten season, they're all crucial. But to be able to start off the Big Ten season 2-0 would put them right up there in the catbird, especially with 2 division opponents, would put them up there battling at least going into Iowa for a spot in the Big Ten championship game. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But
see, hey, that's why they're the excitement ratings, because they could happen. And that's what makes them exciting, because if they're 4-1,
there is a team in the Big Ten that Jeff Brohm has the number of, not called Ohio State because he's 1-0 against Ohio State, but it is Iowa. He is 3-1 at Purdue against Iowa, and he's had some big wins at Iowa. I mean, obviously year one, they went in there with their season essentially on the line and pulled off a pretty big stunner in Iowa City.
Yeah. So I'm really excited for what they can do. So that's why they are number 2. Number 3 for us is Ball State. They dropped from 1-3. They struggled with Western Illinois week 1. They lost to Penn State, which obviously that was expected, but then they get obliterated in Laramie against Wyoming. And it doesn't get any easier with a Toledo team that lost to Notre Dame by 3 and a Western Michigan team the following weekend that is 2-1, including a win this past weekend over Pitt. So it doesn't get any easier for Ball State. That's why they're 3, because our rankings are just top 5, so like 3 obviously right in the middle. And it's kind of like we were with Notre Dame, where like, okay, the ceiling is you could get up there, but also, you know, we're not super impressed with where you are right now. So you're either going to go up, you're going to win against Toledo and Western Michigan, and we're going to shoot you up the rankings, or you're going to lose to Toledo and Western Michigan, and you're going to probably fall out because you're going to be in really dire straits to even try to make another MAC championship game. So Ball State right in the middle for me, as far as, you know, hey, I still have hope that they can right the ship and get to where we believe they could be preseason, but also I'm ready to just say, you know, all right, you're just going to drop down. Obviously it's not destined for Ball State to have 2 really great seasons in a row. You know what? Maybe it's just time to bite that bullet, but we'll see. I'm still leaving them at number 3.
Hey, you know what? I mean, just like Purdue, I guess even more so, I feel like the non-conference really does not matter all that much for Ball State. Was Ball State going to be contending for a playoff spot?
Yes.
No, they weren't.
Yes, they were.
Just weren't. What really starts mattering is now, going into the MAC conference schedule. You know, Ball State only played MAC opponents last year until the bowl game. And that is where they really shined. So I think they can do that again. You know, they have the ability to right the ship and jump back up in these rankings, because now they're getting into the bread and butter of their schedule, where I think they're going to excel. I mean, let's be honest. Wyoming is not a slouch of a football program. And having to go all the way out to Wyoming, that is not easy. There's a lot of factors there. That is also, you're playing,
the highest.
Yeah, you're playing up in thin air. So, I mean, it's not an easy game to play. It's a lot of things are stacked against you going into that game. So, like I said, I'm not worried. In week one, struggling against Western Illinois, the FCS, I cover FCS now, and I'll tell you what, the talk is, how many games each week can the FCS pull over FBS teams? And they just play up for them. I mean, is Washington really that bad, losing to Montana? I mean, Montana's really good.
Oh, yeah.
But they just played up, and it was week one. Week one, a lot of teams come out of the gate slow in week one. And that's what, like, these types of things happen. So I'm not panicking about Ball State at all. I think Ball State will be fine. And I think we'll potentially see Ball State playing in Detroit again come December.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying, is that, like, that's why they're in the middle, because these next 2 weeks are going to be pivotal, because those are two teams that you're likely going to be fighting against to get to Detroit. So number four for us, is our token non-FBS school. You know, we have to, I shouldn't say that, because I actually am very excited to have the Indiana Wesleyan Wildcats on our rankings, because, I mean, they're 3-0 to start the season, and what do they do to open things up? They upset FCS Valpo 28-10 opening weekend.
That's what happens. NAIA plays up to beat the FCS. FCS plays up to beat the FBS.
Yeah.
it's just the way it is.
They did win by forfeit in week two, so that's another dub. You'll take that every time. And then they upset NAIA number 6 Olivet Nazarene this past weekend, 52-28. They're number 25.
That's a drubbing.
Right. And so, I mean, when we did the outline yesterday, they were number 25. They've obviously risen the rankings since then. And, you know, that's behind Devondi Alford, who's got 46 carries for 290 yards and 5 touchdowns. And then they play Marion on October 9th. So that's going to be a really good game, you know, for the NAIA, a really, you know, and you know, I mean, people forget, this IWU program is not that old. They, like, just recently got their football team, and they're playing really good football right now. So, hey, I mean, maybe that's a tailgate spot next year, if we can get it circled on the calendar, because IWU is playing really good football.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I love seeing these smaller schools have success. It's so surprising. People don't get it. Indiana seems to be a hotbed for NAIA football. Marion, IWU. I mean, I know I'm missing some.
St. Francis.
I mean, it's unreal.
Taylor,
yeah.
Taylor's, I mean, even usually pretty good.
There's a lot of good teams around. And
just in general, lower level, like D3, even like Wabash, DePaul can sometimes be up there. Hanover, I think, was like a team that I thought about putting in their preseason, because I think they were like ranked or close to being ranked. So, I mean, UIndy.
Exactly. these are programs that, hey, if you are like, if you want to get your kids out, your young kids out to a football game and don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg to take them there and everything, go to one of these games. They're not expensive by any means. It's, you know, family friendly environments. Go support these small programs. You know, I mean, Purdue's going to get theirs. IU's going to get theirs. Ball State will get theirs, and same with Notre Dame. But, you know, go watch an IU game. Go watch a Marion or St. Francis. Why not? Go support them. Go have some fun. It's good football. It's still college football. And guess what? Some of these guys end up in the NFL as well.
Right. Finally, rounding out the rankings is IU. I thought about putting another, and I thought about putting like Marion or St. Francis here, but I was like, you know what? The audience isn't ready for two NAIA schools in the rankings. We can get them later on in the year.
But Indiana State.
Yeah, that's true. Indiana State, I think, is 2-1. So, yeah. You know, there, even though IU is 1-2, they could still be spoiler. They're still a good team. Like, people think that, like, I mean, granted, we have hated on
quarterback.
We definitely have hated on IU on the podcast before, but like, we just know what the expectations are with the fan base, and we know where they are actually. And so it's obviously those are differing points of view. You know, some of the IU fan base thinks that IU should be playing for the Rose Bowl every year. And this year was maybe the year that it looked like it could potentially come to fruition. And we even said before the season started that like, it's just not going to be that way. So, you know, they could still be a spoiler. Like I said, they're still a good team. They have Western Kentucky this weekend, so that should be a dub. That'll get them back to 500. And then four of their next five games are against ranked teams. They go to number 6 Penn State. Then they have number 20 Michigan State. Then they have number 10 Ohio State. And then they I think they have somebody in the middle of Ohio State and then number 19 Michigan. So, I mean, they could really throw a wrench into the Big Ten or potentially even the playoff if they grab a win in one of those four games, especially if one of those four wins is against Ohio State or Penn State. And I mean, we can roll our eyes at Ohio State, but I mean, Ohio State's been struggling these past few weeks. So we'll see what they look like come Big Ten season. But you know, if Penn State and Iowa look like to be the kind of two front runners right now in the Big Ten, and if you know, IU were to, I mean, they already lost to Iowa, but if they were to, you know, slip, you know, cause Penn State to slip up or beat Ohio State, who then turns around and beats Penn State, you know, it could really not only take the Big Ten out of the college football playoff conversation, but it could also change up who we're going to see in Indianapolis first weekend of December.
Yeah, they still can play spoiler, but they really need to get Michael Penix Jr. figured out. He's throwing more interceptions than he has touchdowns, and I mean, that's, and they can't count the touchdowns that he throws to the other team. That's a big issue, and it's going to be tough. If there's a couple of games there that they can win, I'll say Michigan State potentially. I'm still not 100% sold on the Spartans, even though they did beat Miami, but not sold on Miami.
A game selected by the Craig Crash Wheel of Misery, Michigan State to upset Miami. Well, what's crazy is Miami like struggled to get by App State. So I even said in the video, I was like, this may be one of the easier picks to just say Michigan State, because Michigan State has looked like a strong team and Miami has just been, you know, out of their sorts these first 3 weeks.
But I think the Ohio State game may be the best bet if you have to put money down on IU winning one of those ranked matchups, mostly because it is at IU and the Ohio State defense just hasn't been playing very well. Do I have any faith in IU's offense being able to stop Ohio State's IU's defense being able to stop Ohio State's offense right now? I don't know, because that the Ohio State offense that is kind of clicking and it's tough. I mean, they have really, really good wide receivers. And even if one quarterback's struggling, they have another five-star quarterback in the wings waiting. So that would be tough. But, I mean, it could be a shootout like it was last year at Ohio State. I don't know. I do not have any faith in IU going into Penn State and winning that game. No way. Penn State's going to be too fired up after what happened to them last year at IU. So, no, I think IU gets buried in that game.
So, just to recap, we've got number 1 S Notre Dame, number 2 Purdue, number 3 Ball State, number 4 Indiana Wesleyan, and number 5 IU. That's our Indiana Ambassador rankings, where we rank the most exciting teams in Indiana. So, we'll reconvene in a couple of more weeks, see where they are after heading into those big matchups that we talked about. You know, as we get into, which is, it's almost October, B. Scott, is that crazy or what? That we're almost October, which, I mean, is great for us because, I mean, you're going to have baseball playoffs and college football in full swing and the NBA coming back, but still, it's going by too fast. Let's go ahead and, speaking of fast, segue, we're going to talk about the final weekend of the IndyCar season, their championship stretch. Since we last talked IndyCar, it was right after the doubleheader weekend with them at NASCAR in late August. Since then, we've had the Bomarito Automotive Group 500 that was won by Joseph Newgarden at Gateway. He led 138 laps. In that race, Colton Herta led 101. There were 11 lead changes between six drivers. Pato O'Ward, Will Power, Scott McLaughlin, and Sebastian Bourdais rounded out the top five. Well, then we had the Grand Prix of Portland, where Graham Rahal led the most laps, 36. Pato O'Ward led the first 28 laps, but Alex Palou, who is en route to a possible title, takes the lead on lap 86 and leads the final 24 laps in order to take the victory. There were 12 lead changes among eight drivers in that one. Alexander Rossi, Scott Dixon, and Jack Harvey and Joseph Newgarden round out the top five. And then this past weekend was the Firestone Grand Prix of Monterey. Not a whole lot to write home about in this race. At least as far as the lead is concerned, is Colton Herta dominates, leading 91 of 95 laps. Alex Palou, Romain Grosjean, and Graham Rahal, as well as Pato O'Ward, make up the top five. So the season rounds up at the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach. That's this coming weekend. The point standings look as follows. Alex Palou leads with 517 points. He needs to finish 11th or better to win the championship. Pato O'Ward is 35 points behind, and Joseph Newgarden is third, 48 points behind the leader. So the big question, don't even need to mince too many words over this one. The big question is, will Alex Palou win the 2021 IndyCar title? It looks, well, for a stretch there, it looked like he may be losing his grip on it.
Yeah, it looked like Pato was surging there.
Right.
He had it. Pato had the lead for
a couple of weeks at least. Yeah. But yeah, I think it is a hot take. He is, he's finished 12th or worse in 4 of 15 races, which, I mean, you think like, oh man, there's then in your mind, it's like, okay, that's the 30% chance, or so, sorry, that's 33% chance that that could happen. It's a third of the races that he's, you know, finished 12th or worse. But also that you got to factor in where everybody else finished as well. If you're looking at, you know, that kind of thing, but, you know, but, you know, a couple of those races, you know, of two of those four happened, you know, in this last little stretch here. You know, there was a 27th at the IMS Road Course, the last race that we talked about on the podcast. And then, to end August, was a 20th at Gateway. So it looked like the lead was slipping away for Palou. So there is a little bit of doubt. It's not as I think as much of a home run as it's been maybe in years past, where, you know, the whoever was Scott leading
Dixon, that he finished like 12th or better. And
right.
Like, oh, come on. When is right. He not finished 12th or better?
Exactly. So it's not necessarily, you know, the most dominant driver in the world, you know, trying to be dominant still. It's somebody who is, you know, racing for their first ever title, who looked like the lead was slipping away for a, you know, a hot second there. But he has seemed to have rectified those issues, and he has a win in the second place finish since those struggles. So it looks like whatever it was that was, you know, whatever issue they were having, whatever reason it was that they were struggling or just a couple of bad weeks, it seems like those are well in the rearview mirror. And it looks like, I think, you know, in my opinion, I think Alex Palou is going to win the IndyCar title this weekend, which is crazy to think about because, I mean, we talk about it a lot. When we talk IndyCar, it's a changing of the guard. There's a lot of these young faces out there, and it's going to be really exciting to see what these teams do, not just in this last race, but next year.
It's a hot take for me. I think it's going to be really tough for him to finish less or worse than 11th. Especially, he's just going to drive. I mean, I don't know. He may drive aggressively to try to push it because he is a young driver. But for me, what's been so impressive is that this guy just kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, he didn't even have a full-time ride last year. And here he is. Did he? He may have. He may. No.
He was with Dale Coyne, wasn't he?
He was with Dale Coyne. Yeah. Yeah. And all of a sudden, they were like, Ganassi was like, we'll take him and turn him into a champion immediately. I was like, oh my gosh. How did, I mean, oh man. But, you know, looking back on his the races that he had with Dale Coyne last year, this shouldn't be all that surprising, because the Dale Coyne car had some of its best finishes with Alex Palou and when he was behind the wheel. You know, you just could see it. This young driver had what it takes, has what it takes to win a championship, and we're seeing it sooner than we all could have imagined. But yeah, I think it's going to be a hot take that he's going to walk away with the title. I mean, I don't know. We have seen, I mean, the fact that there's three guys that are in contention for it is a good thing, you know, not just like two drivers. So it is possible that he could lose it. It is very possible, but
keep in mind, this is the first ever time that he's raced at Long Beach, at least in IndyCar. So, I mean, that's another factor too.
That is true. So, but I'm going to still say it's a hot take just because it's a cool story to end the season on. I mean, yeah, it'd be great for Joseph Newgarden to win it, but honestly, I think if either Alex Palou or Pato O'Ward walk away with the championship, that is an even better thing for the sport in the series of IndyCar.
Yeah, it's a win-win, because if Joseph wins, that was my preseason pick to win the title. And if he doesn't, if it's O'Ward or Palou, great for the series. So I can either be selfish and root for my pick or root for the progression of IndyCar as a sport. So, I mean, it's a tough decision for me, but we'll see what ultimately ends up happening. But yeah, I think it's going to be a big weekend for Palou. We're going to talk more in depth about like what it means and all that stuff next week, you know, if he were to win, or we're going to talk in general about it. But before we get to that point, we need to pick a race winner. That's how we're going to end the show. Who do you think is going to win the final race of the season at the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach? Now, you know, I thought about it for me, and I was like, you know, I always root for the story. I want to see I want to see something really cool to cap off the year. And the cool thing to cap off the year, I always thought it was awesome in like NASCAR or wherever, when the driver who was going to win the championship won the race too. Like, it's always like that added feeling, because it's always super weird.
NASCAR has now.
You have right. Well, true.
To win the race to win the championship.
Right. Because it's super weird when like you have like just, you know, another driver that won the race, but his win is overshadowed. I mean, as it should be, by, you know, it'd be like if the NFL played like a third place game at the same time as like the Super Bowl, and they're like, hey, look, this guy won too. It's like, no one cares about that. No one cares about your win. Like, if that's going to happen, you hope it's like Scott Dixon or somebody who's like has won so many, he's like, I don't even keep track anymore. But yeah, it's always super weird. So like, you want that like cool symmetry to be how you go with it. But of course, me being me has to look more into the stats and then is like, nah, actually, you know what? I'm not going to root for that particular moment. My race winner, who I'm going to pick to win the last race of the season, is Alexander Rossi. He has won the last two races at Long Beach. It's been a couple of years since IndyCar has been there. They didn't go last year because of the pandemic. He's had a rough season. And this would be a great way to like cap it off and get momentum for next season. Because I think Alexander Rossi's too good to like have the, you know, this bad of a season and then, you know, have a, you know, a just as bad season next year. So I think he's going to win this race to get him out of that rut and kind of use that momentum for next year's season. So I'm going with Alexander Rossi to win this weekend's race.
You know, oh man, I really want to go Pato O'Ward winning the race and beating out Alex Palou.
Oh, man.
But to be honest, I would not be – I'm going to go with somebody that's having a – that's really turned it on and really become a hot driver right now. And that's Roman Grosjean. Roman Grosjean, yeah. Come fresh off a podium. I mean, yep. He's comfortable in the car. He's getting better week after week after week. I'm gonna go with Roman Grosjean to pull out the win in the season finale.
Like it. So you're going with Grosjean. I'll go with Rossi. Palou winning the championship. So it should be really fun. Like I said, we'll talk more about the end of the season, as well as give some, because we had the schedule get released and I thought about doing it this week, but I was like, you know what, let's just tie a nice bow on the IndyCar season next week.
Races next year.
17. Should be a lot of fun.
17. Yeah, I'm pumped about that.
Yeah, so should be fun. We'll talk about that next week. But that will do it for this week's edition of the Crash Course Podcast. Remember, you can follow us at 3C Media Sports on Twitter, or Crash Course Podcast on Facebook. You can go to our YouTube channel, 3C Media on YouTube. That's where we've not only got this podcast, but also the MCT podcast and some other YouTube specific content. So go over there. You guys have been knocking it out of the park with support. So thank you guys on that one. You can also follow us on TikTok. We've got some TikTok specific content if you guys want to go support that as well. Some shorter videos. Also, we stream live every week, twitch.tv/CraigCrash. You can watch us live, interact with us in the chat. We had Dusty, L, everybody in the chat today. It was a lot of fun. And then also remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts can be heard. You can hear the Crash Course Podcast. B. Scott, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Scott87.
And then you can also, again, follow me at Crash Course FM. That used to be the old handle for the show. So if you want to follow me at that end too, then you can. That is your prerogative. Well, that will do it for this week's edition of the podcast. Next week, we will be back. We'll be talking about some IndyCar. We'll be talking more football. As always, it'll be a lot of fun. We hope to see you there. But until then, have a good week, everybody.